This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we're back with 19 Cats and Counting. In case you didn't know, I am feline behaviorist Rita Reimers, and we're here with cat welfare scientist Katja Kuliti. I just love that. I did not know there was such a thing until you told me you're a cat welfare scientist.
Want to talk about that? I'd be very happy to. About the term animal welfare science and what it means for your cat. Would you like me to say a couple of words?
What does it mean for our cats and dogs?
So this is it's a body of science that has a history, quite a long history. Cats are behind dogs, as in some other areas. I'm sure you've seen it also in your work and in the work of others that you've seen. Cats are about, I would say, 10 years behind, something like that. But it's a body of science that looks at how the animal is coping with the environment that it's living in. And there are different ways. There is not one definition that everybody uses, but there are basically different ways of thinking about it. And it affects how you think about it, affects what kind of life your animal is going to have. Because if you say welfare is just as long as the animal is physically healthy, we're okay. But that doesn't really get, it's more than that, exactly. So it needs to also have this emotional component. And for cats, we know that the bond with their human is very important to them. So it's the emotional component, the physical component, and then this component of naturalness. So being able to do natural behaviors that the cat needs to do. So that for me is really important, especially if we keep our cat indoor only.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I talk about in my behavior. Your cats need to climb. They need to scratch. They need to hunt. They need things that represent all of those activities that normally you're doing outside. You need to make sure that you bring those activities indoors and spend some time with your cat, too. People will bring a cat home and they just put it down. You know, cats are independent. They're really not. They need social structure. And if you don't pay any attention to your cat, you're going to get an aloof cat and a cat that isn't around a lot. So you get, just like with people and relationships, you get out of your relationship with your animals what you put into it. Would you say that's true?
I would absolutely say this is true, and I really believe very strongly in that. It is a relationship like any, like, it's not exactly like any other because we have to accommodate, you know, the species specific needs. But indeed, yes, if you just say it's a cat, it's going to take care of itself, whatever, then that's what you get. And you're definitely not developing this relationship to its full potential. And yeah, the cat is going to be aloof. The cat is also going to be really bored. And, you know, I had something that I have in the pipeline that I plan to write about, which is how bad boredom actually is for animals, for intelligent animals, animals that can be social and they need stimulation, they need play, they need all these different things, and how actually harmful to them chronic boredom can be.
Definitely. I owned a cat sitting company for 17 years just for cats pet sitting. I can't tell you the number of homes I went in, and the only way you know there's an animal there at all is the food bowls on the floor or the litter box, right? They need a lot more than that. If your cat doesn't have mental and physical stimulation, believe me, they're going to find a way to get activity, and at the expense of maybe your furnishings or some of your knickknacks, right? You don't want them to do that. You need to give them proper things so that they can exert their natural personalities.
Yeah. No, that's definitely true. And I think this is also, it's interesting. I've thought about anthropomorphism quite a lot, which is basically thinking of animals or other non-human actors as though they're humans. And so this is also one, you know, where sometimes people think, oh, the cat is like scratching the couch out of spite, or how do they not know, you know, they're not allowed to jump on the windowsill. Yeah, but your cat is not a little person living in your house. Your cat is like an entirely different species. You need to give them, first of all, the resources that we're talking about that they need. And second, this kind of implying this whole level of malice or some kind of spite or something like this when the animal...
Cats don't feel spite. They don't know what that is.
No. And it just, you miss then the real thing and an opportunity to really address it for your cat. Because I think it's never too late. You know, like, I've made mistakes in caring for my cats because I just didn't know. Or one thing I would say, I used to think that if a product is on the market, somebody must have thought about this and somebody must have concluded that this is good. You know, like, it goes for litter boxes with really high sides or really close in.
Or the top entry ones.
Oh, yeah. It's I've never had one of those, but I've had like the really high, you know, to prevent smells from escaping, whatever. And then, of course, now I know that that is not optimal for the cat, but it takes, you have to be interested in this. You have to, I don't like the idea that cats are these low maintenance animals that you can just drop in your house and forget about them. I definitely don't agree with that.
They're not. They just need a different type of attention. And they also don't really like lidded boxes because that holds the smell in. Not only that, but cats are naturally very suspicious of their surroundings, right? Because they're right in the middle of the food chain. They're predator and prey. So they're extra cautious. If they're inside the litter box and they don't know who's outside, you know, they're more cautious about coming out. Maybe they don't even want to go in because they don't want to be trapped in there.
Yeah. That's very true. That's very true. And then, of course, when your cats become senior, then that's a whole another story with arthritis and recognizing when you should switch baby to a. I went for really huge litter boxes with really low edges.
Yeah, I have those for my seniors.
Yeah, so that's very important. Also, having enough of these litter boxes or other resources to make sure that if there is any kind of a intercat competition going on, that everybody is happy and not threatened. Oh my goodness, what a sweetheart.
Say hi, everybody. She's a very shy kitty.
Beautiful.
Actually, I took her in because my mom's friend had adopted her, and I adopted the brother, and my mom's friend passed away, and her husband said, I can't deal with two cats. So he gave me her because she was the newest one. Her name was Teddy. I changed it to Teddy Bear because Teddy sounded like a boy.
Yeah, she's adorable. She looks a lot like Margot. You'll see if Margot comes. She left. I don't know where she went, but she's the same. She's kind of like this great tuxedo kitty cat with the white little socks and black nose. And so, yeah.
She's very sweet. That's another thing, too. Cats have different personalities, so you really have to pay attention to the kind of interaction they like. Like, she likes a lot of calm interaction. Now, my sweetie pie likes to run all over the place. She's like a flying squirrel. I have to make sure I give her lots of active play, right? So you really have to be mindful of that, too.
Definitely. They're all very, very different, and it's just like, you know, we're each a different person. And, you know, one thing that I saw, even just with my three cats, the level of physical interaction that they want. Margot, for example, she is not a lap cat. She's what I call a lap adjacent cat. So she will sit next to me and she'll sometimes even kind of back up her whole body so she's along the side of my thigh.
Yeah.
And then she looks up and she's very happy. She will never sit on my lap. And then Molsey, my little diabetic kitty, she would like start looking at you even well into her senior years. As soon as you enter the room, if you're about to go on the couch, she's already crossing from wherever she is to make sure she can go on your lap, you know? So, and Maya was somewhere in between. So you really have to listen. And sometimes, you know, they're so cuddly and you want to grab them and you want to hold them, but you have to be like, I have to respect what this cat wants and what she's like, and I have to wait.
That's so important. And people ask me, how do I make my cat a lap cat? You don't. They're either are or they aren't, right?
Yeah.
And exactly. If your cat doesn't like sitting on your lap, just be joyful he's sitting next to you, right?
Exactly. So, you know, I've got, and I, with my Maya, I had this beautiful kitty cat that we adopted when we lived in Boston. She took probably, I would say, 10 years to really warm up to me. When we first brought her home, she loved men.
Wow, that's unreal. I mean, mostly they don't like men because of their big presence and their deep voices.
No, she almost went home with the plumber one day. Like, it would be anybody, like my husband's friend, some random person repairing the fridge. And she would be like all over them. And I was kind of the person who cleaned the litter box. But I was like, I'm going to wait. And so eventually when she became older, I became her person. And it was very funny to see because she would just check where I am and follow me everywhere. And I was like, finally, you know.
I took in a feral. He's been here about 3.5 years now. He was FIV, so he couldn't be set back outside, although he could have been, but that's a whole nother podcast. For about 9 months, he hid. Then he started letting me see him, touch him every now and then. Long story short, I can't get in the bed without him jumping on my lap now. So you just have to have patience with your cats. Sometimes you don't see their full personality. You don't know what they've been through in the past, especially if you're adopting an older cat, which I've done. And, you know, I've had to be patient to see what kind of personality they had and, you know, offer attention and see what kind they wanted. You can't just one size fits all for a cat. It doesn't work that way.
Right. And you're totally right. We don't know what they've been through. It might have been very traumatic, or even if not traumatic, it's still very different. Right now, suddenly their person has passed away or went into a care home, and now they're in a shelter, and it's all new, and they have no idea what just happened. And so, yeah, it's...
I've been through that too. And most of them that I've taken in where their owners have passed away, they were fine, but Pickles, she was fine with me, but she just always had this lingering sadness.
Yeah.
Up until she passed away. I had her for about 4 years. I could tell she just was missing her mom, you know. She was missing her human. She tolerated me. She liked me, but, you know, it was not any more than that.
Yeah. Well, of course, they form relationships, and there's still, I just find cats so interesting as species, because for species that have lived with us for so many years, there's still so many things we don't really know.
It's true. Just when you think you know everything, you know, you don't. I'm careful to always say, or to never say, all cats, blah, because it's not true. You know, if you say all cats do this, you'll find the one or two that don't, right? So you can't ever say, you know, all cats like to be petted. No, all cats like this. No, because there's differences.
Yeah, for sure. And this is why I think it's so important to have, when you're thinking about a behavioral problem or a medical problem. Actually, I think a medical problem should be ruled out first whenever there is a behavioral complaint. But I think for me, this is why it's kind of nice for everybody to work together. I, as the guardian, caregiver, owner, whatever term you want to use, I know my cat best if I'm paying attention. But you have the background of being a behaviorist, a veterinarian would bring the medical background. And so, but they're really informed by what I know and what I've noticed about the personality of this cat, what is normal for this cat, you know, especially, again, important coming back to our topic about senior cats, how important it is just to notice the changes, even if it's a positive change, like suddenly the cat is like glued to you, like scotch tape, like, it's something is different.
Definitely. The other thing important to note, that the very first thing you really need to do when your cat has a behavior change or as a grown owner is take the cat for an exam at your veterinarian. Sometimes a behavior problem is not a behavior problem. It is born of a medical condition. And after that, it could have become habit, and then we can work on it. But you really can't work on a behavior situation until you make sure your cat is 100% healthy.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And then I think one example is urinating outside the litter box, for example. I think this is something that I really don't like the term inappropriate urination, because I think at least in some cases it's completely appropriate from the cat's point of view, because they're not getting the cleaning frequency that they should have, or there's not enough of the specific resource, you know, all of that. And there, indeed, like you said, it could start with something like this, where the box is just not clean enough, or the cat doesn't like the type of litter. And then the cat starts getting used to going somewhere else, and then it takes time to change. And this is where the vet and the behaviorist work together. So, so there's just so much to know about them as a species. But I think you don't have to be a super expert or anything. You just have to be curious and interested and be willing to reassess what you do, you know, instead of getting defensive or getting like, well, you know, I've always done it like this, because I like to learn what else is there, and then see like, what can I do better? What do I know now? How can I apply it?
Exactly. I'm very careful to be judgment free. You know, people that come to me with declawed cats or whatever. I mean, I'm not for declawing, but I'm not going to judge you if you've got a declawed cat. You need help. They need help too. So we were talking a little bit about cat loss and cat grief. I think sometimes people sweep it under the rug. If their friend has lost a cat or a dog, oh, they'll get over it in a day. It's not true. Sometimes losing a cat can be harder almost than losing a person in your life, because they're there with you when you're brushing your teeth, you know, when you're getting ready for work, you're making your coffee. They're there with you for every moment of your day, right? And then they're gone. Yeah. I just went through that. I'm still going through losing my boo-boo.
Yeah, you're right. It's maybe a few things. There's so much, I think, to unpack when you talk about companion animal loss grief, but especially cat loss grief. I think from what I've seen in kind of the reading, the research that I've done, I've also gone after losing my cats to a support group.
Right.
From what I've seen, it was really striking, because even dog loss, and it shouldn't be like a suffering Olympics, you know, but it is actually in some ways. People think that your grief. If you've lost a dog, you're sort of more justified in grieving than if it's a cat.
Yeah,
I was in this support group for people who have lost cats and dogs. I think it was mainly cats and dogs. You could have come there with any animal loss, but it was kind of there were very few cat people there. There were mostly dog people who have lost a dog. And somebody said something like, well, you know, I'd like to think, somebody was very sad, and they said something like, I'd like to think that my dog would have wanted me to live my best life. Cats, I don't know. And I was like, what? Crystal. And it was just, there were some of these comments that you're like, why does it need to be better or worse? I think both of these suffer a bit the same fate in the hands of broader society, where people just don't think it's a valid form of grief. And, you know, it's a huge motivator for why I write about it and why, because it's a vulnerable thing. Like, I'm putting myself out there and I'm saying it really hurts. I've lost my Maya 3 years ago. I've lost Mosi almost 2 years ago. And it's, if you feel the same, I understand you and I see you. So like, for me, this was one of the big reasons why I decided to write about it, to make it okay for people to feel like this. And I've had people comment and say, you've put into words what I feel. Thank you so much. Like, your writing really speaks to me. And so that's, yeah, very meaningful to me.
When I wrote my book, Sadie's Heart, about losing my Sadie cat, back in 2009, there was no support out there for grief. I spent a week in bed mourning this cat. And I worked for Richard Simmons at the time. I don't know if you know who he is, exercise guy with the sparkly tops and the striped shorts. Yeah. So he called me every day to make sure I was okay. And he had dogs. He'd been through dog grief. So he understood what I was feeling. But a lot of my friends were like, it's just a cat. You have other cats. What's the difference? One doesn't substitute for the other, right?
No. Or people would say, oh, when are you going to get another one? Or, you know, but it's not a pair of shoes. It's all in its own time and it's unique. Every loss is unique and you will know this and I know this. And every instance of grief is unique and you never know. It's not like, oh, I've lost one cat. I know how to lose cats now and I'm better equipped to manage grief. I know more just where to find things and where to find support if I need it. That is for sure. And I understand more some things, you know, like why it's so common for people to feel guilt and regret, and especially in this kind of a caretaker relationship that is quite unique, right? Because
guilt is animals, a big part of it, yes.
They live with us. They're not going to go on. Like, if you have children, they go on to have their own life. You're not preparing your cat to go have their own life. You're caring them for their whole life. And then also, if you're fortunate enough to have shared their senior years, the caretaking, I think, is something very intimate and really very meaningful. And yes, you're right. When you say that I think human relationships are different in many ways, but also usually more complicated. There's usually a mixture of things there. Whereas with your companion animal, it's just, there is typically not like that underlying tension or whatever that you can have with people. And yes, you're totally right. They're here with you through thick and thin every day, morning till night. And
exactly.
Yeah.
So every moment
it can be very destabilizing to lose that routine and to lose that companionship that was there. So yeah, I'm sorry again for all of the kitty cats that you've lost. And of course, I understand that it's never just a cat. And
it's never just a cat. That's the thing.
No.
I hate when people say that. I lost both my parents at the end of 24, 5 weeks apart. And then the beginning of 25, I lost three cats. I lost one in January, then March, and then another one a couple later. And on top of the grief over my parents, I think it deepened the grief over my cats, because they were like my security blankets to help me get through the loss of my parents, right? And then they were dying. I think that was harder on me because it exacerbated the other loss. And what I'm trying to get at is, I think every time you lose a pet, you kind of think back on all the other losses in your life, right? So it's a combination, not just like my boo-boo. It's not just grief over boo-boo. It's grief over losing, you know, Oliver and Smoochie and Pinky and mom and dad, and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I really understand you. I lost, in the space of a year and a half, my Maya and Mosi and my mom very suddenly in between the two senior cat losses.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, no, thank you. And I'm also very sorry for your loss as well. But I understand this, I think, on many levels, but also this idea of grief overload. At some point, it just felt like I can't take it anymore, you know, because it was just so much and so intense. And it's also in quite a short period of time. And you mentioned, yeah, some people expect you to just go back like nothing happened in a few days. That's not a very informed view of grief. And I think in general, society doesn't do a tremendously good job with grief, period. Even human loss grief, but animal loss grief, you can forget it. People just don't. I mean, I took sick days or something, I can't remember, vacation days when Mosi died, because I just couldn't function. And then it took really a long time. It was just too much in a relatively short period. And I completely agree with you too, that with losses, you go back to the prior losses. And then if you live with senior cats, I think you know a thing or two about anticipatory grief, where you know, yeah, these cats are getting old, they're getting frail. I've seen this before. You've seen this before. And you're like, please don't, you know.
You recognize it, but you don't want to. You know, you're like Boo Boo. I'm like, the week before, I know you're going. I have to acknowledge that, but I don't want to.
Yeah, it's very hard. It's very hard. So
I know the cats I've lost when I was still in corporate America. I left that in 2006. But the ones, you know, before then, when I had an IT job, and you'd have to pretend you were okay, because you can't just call it, my cat died. I mean, most people don't understand that. You have to go to work. It's awful.
Yeah, I agree with you. But this is also why I think it's important. And if I can change it a little bit in a very small way, I'm willing to do that and put myself out there and say, I can raise my hand. This really hurts. This is a legitimate form of grief. It's okay to feel like this. It's okay to talk about this, you know, because I think it's, I felt very alone when I lost Maya and Mosi. And there were probably a bit more resources than when you wrote your book, you know, but not really that much. And it was still really much more dog, I would say, and horse focused, what I found. There's really not really that much on cat loss grief.
It's true.
You know, so
I think it's changing, though.
Gotcha. It's changing. I hope to write a book one day. Maybe I'll serialize in some way my letters to Mosi and like add some illustrations or something. But I just think it's so important for people to know that they're not alone. Of course, every loss is unique, and nobody knows quite how you feel. But I think just even knowing that it's okay, that to feel as strongly as you feel, and you're not, there's nothing wrong with you. You're not crazy.
Don't feel ashamed.
You're not overly sensitive. Right. It's a big, big loss. So
it is a big loss. You know, for me, my cats are my family, because I don't have any family left now. So when I start losing them, it triggers that, you know, I'm that much more alone without family. So there's a lot more to the grief than just the grief over not having that cat in your life. That's there. That's part of it. But it's also the effect it has on your family and the other cats in my household.
Yes, of course. They you know, I will confess, I don't know too much about the topic, but I know that it's still something that scientists want to understand better. What do cats know about other cats when they live in the multi-cat household? What should you do? Should you let them? Like I, from what I've observed, when my Maya was at the end of her life.
I have a Bella.
you have. So mine is Maya.
Bella, okay.
Yeah, and so when she was at the end of her life, one of my other cats came and sat very close to her. And, you know, I don't know what conclusions to draw from it, but I think she understood she was sitting a bit differently than she would normally
do. Yeah, I think they do know.
And so I think they do know. And I've also read in some literature that they say if you're making a euthanasia decision and you're taking your cat to the clinic for that, or if it's at home, to let the other cats say goodbye, give them an opportunity to come into the room. Don't close them up somewhere, you know, so because they do understand. And I think with my cats, I definitely saw when one of them passed away, the two, they were kind of like looking for her, or they I think they noticed something was different.
Oh, sure.
And then, yeah. And then when Mosi died and it was just Margot left, I think for a while too, she was like looking around and trying to understand. I don't know exactly what she understood, but I think they do understand probably more than we realize.
Oh, yeah, they do. I know my Sadie, when she died, she was really bonded to my cat Trouble. He's passed since, but he was never the same because they were like two peas in a pod. And
yeah.
He just had a kind of sadness to him after that. Really hard. But, you know, just don't be ashamed to feel the grief. You've got to feel it, because if you deny it, it's just going to stay in your background, right? You have to feel the grief and move past it. I always say grief isn't something you get over. You just learn to live around it, right?
Yes. I would like to share with you something that I, when I spoke with somebody who's a pet loss grief coach, she shared a beautiful thing that I then found online, and I have returned to it since. She said to me, you know, exactly what you're saying, that you don't get over it. But she gave me this, she said, oh, there was an interview that the actor Billy Bob Thornton gave some years ago, in which he speaks of losing his brother. His brother died of a heart ailment at a young age. And then he said, well, look, you know, I'm living with the, like, I'm living fully with the broken heart. So I've gone on with my life, and I do my acting, and I do this and that, but this grief, it's always with me. So it's taking your broken heart and just finding a way to live with it. I can tell you my heart is broken because Maya is gone and Mosi is gone, and I think about them all the time. And so the idea is not, okay, we get better, we put it in the drawer and we move on, but we move forward with it. And then, yeah, I think it makes us more attuned as people to other people's losses, to just things. And yeah, I think it's something that I don't want to not miss them.
I get it.
Yeah.
You have different, or at least for me, there's different breaks in my heart for each one. So it's not just one bro. It's not a heart broken once, it's many times. But then, you know, you have to remember that you've given the cat or dog the best life possible, right? Because if you didn't take in that particular cat or dog, who knows what kind of life he or she would have had. So that, and I believe they take our love with them. I mean, they die peacefully if they're with you and they know they were loved.
Yeah. Yes. I think it's very important. And they were never alone, and they knew they were loved.
Definitely. Well, I know we need to wrap up. I'd love to have you back again. Do you have any last thoughts for people listening?
Yes, I would just say, maybe first, if you're grieving a loss of a cat companion or any animal companion, please be gentle with yourself, because it's a tough loss. It's something that, it's a full body experience, in my experience, and you really have to give yourself the time and the space to feel how you feel and find whatever helps you. For some people, it helps to talk. For some people, it helps them to write or to just read some articles online. And I can send you, maybe for the show notes, the website of the pet loss grief coach that I spoke with. And she has a wonderful website. Yeah, where people can go and just download their own little resources.
And
she's wonderful. She's such a lovely person and very kind and very sensitive. I'm gonna send you the information. And so I would just say, if you're in that situation, please be kind with yourself and know that you're not alone. And otherwise, yeah, if you're caring for a senior, good for you. It's a very special stage in life.
And, they're very special.
Treasure it. And in general, if you're sharing your life with cats, it can be a very meaningful and a very rich experience. So I hope you continue to learn and grow. And you know, when we know better, we do better. And so that's, I think, the goal of living with companion animals, making sure they have the best lives that they can have with us.
All the way to the end. Don't be afraid to adopt those seniors that you see in the shelters or rescues. I've done it many times. And even though you know your time with them is going to be short, you bring them a lot of peace and comfort. I mean, they don't want to die in a shelter, right?
Yes.
Give them love.
Yes.
They deserve the best senior life, especially the end in their golden years. They deserve the best they can get.
Yes.
So, Katya Kuliti, thank you so much. Look up the Mittens Companion Project, and I will have all that information in the website on my YouTube when I release the video version. And I hope you'll come back again.
Wonderful, Rita. I had a lovely time. Please just let me know, see how it goes. If you want me to come and talk, I'm happy to do that. It's been extremely enjoyable and just a lovely way to spend the evening.
Thank you. And of course, I have to thank Mark Winter for giving me this wonderful spot on Pet Life Radio. I so appreciate it. Till next time, don't forget that every day is Catter Day. We'll see you next time.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.